You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Broke like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with bassist Rodney Jordan. The Rodney Jordan Quintet will be performing on Friday night, September 19th, at 8:10 p.m. as part of the Savannah Jazz Festival in Forsyth Park, which runs from September 19th to the 21st, with September 19th and 20th at Forsyth Park, and then over to the Plant Riverside District on September 21st. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Rodney Jordan.
Hello, Dave. It's nice to be here. I'm looking forward to talking to you today.
Well, let's get to know Rodney Jordan. Tell me your musical journey.
Well, I was born in Memphis, Tennessee. I got into music through actually a test. They decided to start a string program at my elementary school. And so the string instructor came by and he gave us all musical aptitude tests, which was big back then. And I think I was in the fourth grade. So, and it was one of those bubble in things. Can you imagine a fourth grader bubbling in? And the types of questions they would have would be something like, they play two pitches and you'd say, is the second pitch higher or lower than the first pitch? That kind of thing. After 30 minutes of that, I think I was bubbling anything. So somehow through the grace of God, I got into the string program. And that's how I got into organized music. And then I also played in the church. I grew up in the church as well.
Now, specifically the bass.
Well, I started out with a violin. And then I played cello for a very long time. And then I switched to bass. So I guess we could say the instrument sort of grew with me.
Wow. And at what time did you start playing the bass?
Let's see, somewhere around 10th grade or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so music was very important to you, obviously.
It was extremely important. We had a really great elementary school principal. I still remember his name. It was Ronald B. Bynum, his name was. And he was really into the arts. He'd be the star in our play every Christmas. And we had a pit orchestra in elementary school. I mean, it was really cool. And, you know, he would charge. It would be one of our big fundraisers. And everybody in the neighborhood would come out and check out our performance every year. And so that kind of got me hooked on music for sure.
And so in elementary school, you were either playing the violin or the cello.
Absolutely, yeah. I had a short stint with the violin. The cello was a little cooler back then. So I spent a lot of time with the cello. Yeah.
And so when you started the bass, and started the bass sounds like in high school.
Yep.
What about the bass seemed to be really important to you?
It wasn't the instrument per se. We were all trying out new things all the time and playing new instruments, playing each other's instruments. So it was more of an investigative thing. There was nothing specific that drew me to the bass. I really loved the cello and I was happy there. But the bass could do so many cool things. Back then in the 70s, popular tunes had all these really cool bass lines. And so, you know, it would define those tunes. And so the bass was a pretty logical instrument to sort of be attracted to based on that. So I literally, when I got the bass, the acoustic bass and the electric bass, I literally would play Name That Tune with the kids in my neighborhood. They would come around to my bedroom on the side of our house. I'd open up my window and they'd be outside and they'd be said, play this tune. And then I'd play the bass line of that tune, or that tune. And we literally would play Name That Tune. And so that made me a star in the neighborhood. My nickname was Guitar for a while.
Well, back in the 70s, the bass was a lot cooler than the cello.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cello's starting to catch up, but still.
You remember the Electric Light Orchestra? They had the cellos that would stand up and play. That was about as cool as I got. And I thought that was the drop off right there. You're just not going to get any cooler than that.
So you went to the bass, which is even a cooler instrument that you can stand up and play.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was great. Great instrument. And then my instructor was a bass player as well. So that was really great. Once he tricked us into coming to one of his recitals. He told us that we were going to play. So we show up with our tuxedos on, our instruments, and then he has, well, put your instruments down over in the corner there. And so we all sit down and he plays a recital for us at a church in Memphis. I thought that was great. That was a good way to get us to come to that concert. We didn't play a note.
And so you went then on to college for music.
I did. I went to Jackson State University. I studied with London Branch, who was a fantastic musician there. And then from there, I got into jazz. I guess I should back up just a little bit. In high school, we had a very cool band director. His name was Emerson Abel. And Emerson played alto saxophone. And so I played in his high school jazz band. He was a really great musician and someone who he has a star on Beale Street right now. He literally would use a calligraphy set and handwrite all of the parts and pass them out, and we'd play them. And he was one of those guys that went to college on the GI Bill. You know, that was big for African American band directors back then. And so I learned a lot from him as well. So then I went to college and I got a chance to study with Dr. London Branch at Jackson State University. At that time, Jackson State had the only HBCU full orchestra in the country. And so we played a lot of standard literature, Beethoven symphonies, et cetera. Schubert finished all of the great repertoire. So I was always interested in playing music. Genre was not a thing for me. It was just play music.
Well, and in those days, there was classical music training in colleges. The idea of jazz music training in colleges had not really come along yet.
It wasn't even a thing at all. You could not major in jazz at all. So I had two options. I could major in orchestral performance or education. And I decided to go into education. And I figured I'm playing a lot anyway, so I'm going to play. Consequently, I ended up auditioning for the Mississippi Symphony Orchestra, and I won a chair in the symphony. And I played in the symphony while in school for 6 years. And there I got to play all nine of the Beethoven symphonies and a lot of other really, really cool things. And I was assistant principal bassist in the symphony. So I was learning so much about music and just getting it in my ears and under my fingers.
And how and when did you make the transition to jazz?
We all started with high school with Emerson Abel. Mean, I remember some of the first tunes he would hand out for us to play in high school. I Can't Stop Loving You, Ray Charles. He actually wrote that arrangement out for us. And then some Duke Ellington pieces, like Mood Indigo. I think Mood Indigo was my first actual jazz piece I ever learned. And so I just kind of kept playing the music. Once I got to college, I played one semester in the college jazz band because I was really, my scholarship was for orchestra, but they needed a bass player. So I played actually, well, 1 year in the jazz band. And I was doing a lot of playing around town with small ensembles. There was a lot of gigs to be had back then. So I was sort of a man about town doing those things. So it kept me busy. In every town, there's always some jazz musician who's been playing for years and years and years, and they don't teach, but they're out there doing it. And so I got to meet a lot of those guys, one of which was Andy Hardwick in Jackson, Mississippi. He actually hired me to play a gig 3 nights a week at a local hotel. And there he just really let me have it in terms of ear training, jazz theory, learning repertoire. And I got to play with a fantastic drummer named Quintus Johnson, who played like a machine. It was amazing. He actually taught at the Berklee College of Music. Among his pupils were people like Branford Marsalis. He had Branford in his combo. Quintus was a fantastic gentleman, fantastic man. So I was just around really great players. I was very fortunate.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with bassist Rodney Jordan. The Rodney Jordan Quintet will be performing on Friday night, September 19th at 8:10 p.m. as part of the Savannah Jazz Festival in Forsyth Park. And so it sounds like in the jazz perspective, you learned by doing.
Yes, absolutely. Having those 3 nights a week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at the hotel where I would play, you know, standard repertoire. And then we would get into some other specific tunes, like Chick Corea tunes and that kind of thing. That's where I learned that repertoire as well, Joe Henderson's tunes. Yeah, I mean, it was a really great opportunity. And then I met a really fantastic drummer there who also lived in Mississippi at the time, Alvin Fielder. And I learned so much from him. I mean, really fantastic drummer. And I just kind of really just kept building from there, really just building. Alvin really played a lot of different things. And a lot of my teachers studied in Chicago. When I say study, that's sort of where they got to play a lot of their gigs and that kind of thing. And Alvin just, I would meet with him on Sundays. I might go over to his house at Sunday at 10 a.m. and I would leave at 9 p.m. I literally would hang out with him all day. And all of his records were listed by drummer. So if you didn't know your drummers, you couldn't find anything. So he took me under his wings and showed me how rudiments work around the drum kit, what to listen for. We spent a lot of time listening to drum solos. So I understand what drummers do.
And so it sounds like when you were in Jackson, you had 3 nights a week gig. You'd head over for some education on Sundays. You would have your symphony gig.
Yeah.
And be going to school.
That'd be Thursday through Sunday would be the symphony gig. Yeah, absolutely.
And so it sounded like you were very busy.
I was extremely busy. Yes, I was. Busy is good for young people. Keep us out of trouble. I still managed to get into some trouble.
But good trouble.
But good trouble, yes.
After graduating, then, you're still playing in the symphony and then still gigging around town. When did that sort of change in terms of movement more toward bass and perhaps moving back into education?
Well, let's see. I met a gentleman by the name of Jerry Bracey, who was another educator. He was a band director at a local high school. He had to do an internship at a local school. So I got to hang out with him and watch him teach. And he was a very unique, very dynamic person who used so much psychology in a great way. And all of his bands sounded great. I mean, he had a couple of master's degrees, but one was in conducting. Yeah, he was just an amazing teacher. So I sort of fell in love with teaching through watching him. It was really great. He was fantastic. So consequently, he helped me to get my first teaching job. And I had actually gotten really good as his assistant, so much so that when he was out for whatever reason, they didn't get a sub. I actually just took over the day's work with the students. And so, you know, sort of fell in love with that aspect of music. You know, it's all music, you know. You're either playing or teaching, but your head is in the music, you know. Once he gave me this assignment where he opened up the library, we're going to do a Christmas concert. And he said, okay, I want you to go in there and select a piece of music. And, you know, you have to teach it to the students and that sort of thing. Now, whatever you pick, you've got to conduct that on the concert. So I went in there and I've been playing in symphonies and so I went in there and picked what must have been the most difficult piece of music ever. And I said, well, that's what you got to play. And so I had to have sectionals on top of sectionals. And man, I had to study so hard to get them to play that piece. They did a good job. It was fantastic. But boy, I worked so hard. But I learned a great lesson about selecting music for ensembles and that kind of thing. And so, man, everything has been just a learning adventure for me.
Well, I love live music. Live music is just, to me, what I like to see. And I mean, people will say, hey, you got the album. Why do you go out and see these people live? Because I travel a lot in terms of going to different festivals to see live music. And I say, there's nothing like live music. And things that can happen on the bandstand during live music, that there are, like a handful of musical experiences that I've had that now have become legendary to me. And you are part of one of those legendary experiences.
Wow, tell me about this.
Well, what happened was this was back in the day of the Savannah Music Festival when they really would schedule jazz artists in pretty much during 1 week. And so often there were a lot of jazz musicians around. So they would have a jam. Once during the Savannah Music Festival, they'd have a late night jam after the last jazz concerts of that day. And at this jam, there was the Marcus Roberts Trio, you, Marcus, of course, and Jason. And then there's the Christian McBride Trio. Now, I think it was you guys were up on stage playing, and then the drummer for the Christian McBride Trio and Christian McBride walked on stage. And you and Christian McBride on the bass, one was playing the fingering and one was plucking the strength. And you then switched off. So you went from one bass player to the next bass player, switching off as you were playing. And Jason did the same thing with their drummer. You switched off, and Marcus did the same thing with the piano player. And so suddenly, in the middle of a tune, you had a whole new trio up there on stage. And then
I
you did it
remember that.
again in the opposite direction.
I remember that. I remember that. That was a great night.
That was truly a remarkable experience that it goes into that legendary category.
Nice. Well, I'm glad.
This is WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the Savannah Jazz Festival. The Savannah Jazz Festival runs without charge from September 19th to the 21st in Forsyth Park and at District Live in the Plant Riverside District of Savannah. It features musicians such as Rodney Jordan, Spyro Gyra, and Annette Cohen. More information can be found at www.savannahjazz.org. Evening Eclectic features weekly conversations with and the music of national and international musicians from a wide range of musical genres. Join me, Dave Lake, your Evening Eclectic host, and these musical guests each week on Sunday nights from 8 until 10 p.m. on WRUU. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with bassist Rodney Jordan. The Rodney Jordan Quintet will be performing on Friday night, September 19th at 8:10 p.m. as part of the Savannah Jazz Festival in Forsyth Park, which runs from September 19th to the 21st, with September 19th and 20th at Forsyth Park, and then over to the Plant Riverside District on September 21st. Well, so Savannah is very familiar with you coming as part of the Marcus Roberts Trio, but this year you're coming to the Savannah Jazz Festival with your own quintet.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. I've played with so many different bands and different iterations on on this festival. Yeah, this is the very first time that I actually get to bring my own band in and play some of my own music. So I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to this for an entire year.
And is this the same quintet that's on your Memphis Blue album from last year?
It is. It's the same quintet, yes. Got Melvin Jones on trumpet, Mark Sturbank on saxophone, Louis Hervo from Atlanta on piano, and the great Quentin Baxter on drums.
And I have to say, the Memphis Blue album is absolutely fabulous. And
Thank
I
you.
presume you'll be playing some tunes from that album.
Yes, we will, for sure. Yes. Several, in fact, yeah. And we've got some other things, some other surprises in store that are mixed in. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be high energy. And, I played that festival. It's a beautiful festival in Forsyth Park. It's, just all the people hanging out. And, I played it last year. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it so much. I can't wait to get up there and do it.
Well, and in this case, you'll be playing tunes from the Memphis Blue album, which again, as I just love that album because it's got a real interesting collection of originals and then some, I think, three unusual arrangements that you've done of some other works. But let me just take two originals of yours that they really show that you are a jazz aficionado as well as a jazz player, because you do a piece called Hargrove, which of course is dedicated to Roy Hargrove.
Well, Roy was another person that I met when he was in high school at the Music Fest USA thing. And I've always admired Roy. He covered everything you can cover in jazz for someone born in that time. He gets into hip hop. He played the standards, played the straight eighth music from South America very well. And then he had a big band. And he wrote some really great tunes. And so on the day he passed, I had this melody in my head. Do 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 do. And it just sounded like something Roy might play on trumpet. And it wouldn't go away, so I just wrote it down. I put some changes on it, and then we recorded it, and a lot of people like it. So it has a lot of energy. But it's Roy from my perspective. So someone who was born in 1965. So this sort of has a funk and maybe a little bit of a disco kind of a tinge to it as well. So it's really from my perspective. It's his melody, but it's from my perspective. Yeah, I'm glad that people like it because it's been played on the radio a lot. And it's a type of tune that I would imagine that, when I was growing up, my parents might be playing Bidwiz or Spades or whatever they were playing, and this would be the music maybe playing in the background.
Thank you. And you have another number on that, The Art of Blakey. And this is, oh man, you just catch the real swing of the Jazz Messengers.
Yeah, it was a great tune. Yeah, I wrote that back when I was in Jackson, Mississippi, actually. Yeah. Sometimes you have these melodies in your head, and it comes from listening to records and that kind of thing. And if they don't go away, then I'll write them down and then we'll play them. Yeah, that's definitely one of those. I wanted to feature the drummer, and I wanted it to sound like something the Messengers might have played back in the day. Yeah. It's got a good set of changes that horn players like to solo over. So all the cats, you can kind of tell they like those changes. So that's cool. It was great. It's so gratifying to have a piece of music in your head and you give it to some great musicians and then they sort of take it to another level. And I live for that.
the album's called Memphis Blue, and so Memphis, of course, is the home of the blues to me,
It is.
and so you'd expect a whole album of blues, but this is, I think, more blues inspired, perhaps, than blues.
Exactly. You know, when teaching students how to play jazz, you don't start off with 1940s bebop. You start out with some blues. And so you might even go back before 1900 and find some tunes that they can play. Or maybe some of Jelly Roll Morton stuff, which the Jelly Roll Morton stuff is pretty complicated. But blues is so important. The feeling of blues, the form, the simplicity of it, the feeling of it. I never want to go too far away from that. I mean, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. I went to college in Jackson, Mississippi. So I've seen the blues and I know what it smells like. And I've been around some great guitar players. Lord have mercy. I mean, really great. Like Thesti Jackson, who's still playing a lot. Wayne Goins, another great guitar player from Chicago. And these guys, man, they could play everything from B.B. King to Foreigner on guitar. And so for me, blues starts with the guitar and that feeling that comes with bending a string. And so that's why the beginning of Memphis Blue, I'm playing the bass, but I'm sort of playing it from the perspective of a guitar. That's why I have chords and that sort of thing in there. But to me, that's what the blues is. Yeah, it starts with the guitar.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with bassist Rodney Jordan. The Rodney Jordan Quintet will be performing on Friday night, September 19th at 8:10 p.m. as part of the Savannah Jazz Festival in Forsyth Park. And honestly, I was looking over just the list of songs that you were doing on this Memphis Blue album before I started sitting down listening to it, and which is actually unusual for me. But and as I was looking through, about halfway through, I saw Autumn Leaves. And I go, oh, snore. But your arrangement of Autumn Leaves is so original.
Yeah, you know, when we were in the studio, we recorded this album back in 2020 during the pandemic. And we did two takes of Autumn Leaves, and it was like the standard way most people play Autumn Leaves. And I was like, okay, you know, it's been done, you know. And so I got up the second morning and I was on YouTube and I was checking out various groups. I came across Wayne Shorter's band. You know, the one with Danilo Perez and John Patitucci and those guys. And they were playing one of his signature tunes, but it was so open and free. I thought, man, that's beautiful. I wonder what would happen if we were to play something like that. And so I came up with a plan that morning before I had breakfast. I went in the studio. I told the guys, well, we're going to do this. We're going to start with the introduction, and then we're going to have a cue here and a cue at the very end. Here's the solo order, ready, set, go. And that's it. It was one take, and everybody just played beautifully. And at the very end, and I wish I had included this, you could hear us all giggling because we couldn't believe what we had just done. And we couldn't believe that we successfully landed with everything intact. But it was beautiful, and I'm glad we captured that moment. So it was Autumn Leaves, but it was, you know, it was the way we were feeling. It was 2020, and we didn't know what the heck was going to happen. And so that's what that's coming from. Was one guy who reviewed it, and he said, well, this didn't quite work, did it? And well, of course, you know, when people are reviewing your music, who knows what they're going to say. But I don't think they quite got where we were coming from. We were kind of coming from Miles Davis's mid-60s kind of vibe. And really, if you listen carefully to the bass, man, I'm so ripping from Ron Carter, it's not even funny. There's one thing I played, I was like, man, that's straight up Ron. But it's in my subconscious and it comes out. And, you know, and so that's really what that was all about. It's not about reinventing what Miles did or anything. It was just about building on it and using it and bringing it to our situation today.
Well, of course, this is a Joseph Kosma tune, but you've been to Savannah enough that I'm sure that you realize, I don't know if it's a city ordinance or what, but everybody has to introduce Autumn Leaves as a Johnny Mercer tune.
Yes. Well, yeah, I understand why. That's a beautiful tune. I enjoy playing it.
Yeah.
Haunting melody. We only use the end of the melody. But I miss you most of all, my darling, when autumn leaves start to fall. That's it. That's the only part of the melody that we used in the piece. Thank you.
Yeah, but it's such a wonderful arrangement, I tell you. It went from, oh man, not another version of Autumn Leaves, to, man, this is one of the best tracks on the album.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And of course, there's Storm Will Pass, and that's
Right.
Melvin Jones, Son of Memphis.
From the past, that's by Melvin Jones. That's a beautiful song. I mean, beautiful piece of music. Actually, I asked all the guys before we went into the studio, if you guys want to write anything, we'll record it. And Melvin said, "Oh, I got something." And the next day he brought that in, and wow, we just played it down, and it was beautiful. And it was really, I wanted to put that on the recording first because, the pandemic was horrific for us at the time. And so that was a great tune of optimism, which is what the blues is about, being optimistic. And so that's why we sort of led with that tune. Great melody, great solos. We'll definitely play that one.
Well, I know you're very busy, so I'll let you go, but I do want to ask about, is there anything you wanted to say about the performance that you're going to be doing here in Savannah that we haven't mentioned?
Well, we want to go high energy because I remember, what it feels like to play out there. And we want to keep a lot of nice, positive energy going. Man, we all love to play together so much that I hope the audience, I know they're going to feel that. I'm not worried about that at all. We just enjoy playing together. There's a lot of magic that happens between us. It's going to be special. I'll have my 60th birthday on that September 16th. That's right before we do that performance. So I'm going to make this my official birthday party.
Sounds fabulous.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with bassist Rodney Jordan. And as we've been talking about, the Rodney Jordan Quintet will be performing here in Savannah on Friday night, September 19th at 8:10 p.m. as part of the Savannah Jazz Festival in Forsyth Park. The Savannah Jazz Festival runs from September 19th to the 21st, with September 19th and 20th at Forsyth Park, and then over to the Plant Riverside District on September 21st. And so you're on opening night of the festival. It's just a wonderful time to have a Savannah favorite, Rodney Jordan, back in town. And I want to thank you so very much for coming with your quintet, but also thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
My pleasure, Dave.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2.